From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of December, 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the just-released USDA Hogs and Pigs Report with Alton Kahlo of the Steiner Consulting Group. He's out of Manchester, New Hampshire. Mike Zuzulo is on holiday today. And then a bit later in the program, Mark Lovell from the Illinois Tax School, the University of Illinois, will be here to take us through the Affordable Care Act. Many of you will need to be signed up very shortly for that act. He'll take us through the website and what the consequences might be for individuals and the Affordable Care Act. And it all happens during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Checking now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for a Friday afternoon. The soft red winter wheat finished the March at $6.09, up 3 for the afternoon. May at 6.16 and a quarter, 2 3/4 higher. And July wheat at 6.21 and a quarter, up 2.5 cents. The September at 6.31, up 2.5 as well. March corn futures 4.27.5, a penny and a quarter higher. The May at 4.35 3/4, up 1 1/4. July corn $4.42 3/4, up a penny, and December futures of next year at $4.55 1/4, 0.75 cents higher for the new crop. March contract at $4.66 1/4, up 0.75 cents for the 2015 contract. January soybeans at $13.31 1/2, up 12 3/4. The March 13.13 3/4, 8 1/2 higher. And May beans at $12.98 3/4 a bushel, up 8 1/4. July settled at $12.86 1/4, up 7 1/2. November beans $11.54 1/2, new crop, up 3 cents on the day. January of 2015 at $11.59 1/2, up 3 as well. January bean meal at $445.70, up $4.70, and the bean oil at $39.02, 15 cents higher for the day. Live cattle futures in the December contract at $133.85, up $1.15. February at $134.95, 80 cents higher. January feeder cattle at $167, up 40, and the March at $167.80, up 60. Lean hogs at $85.65, up 35 cents, and April at $90.97.5, up 32.5 cents. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online anytime you'd like, on demand, for your programming content at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, February contract, $100.23 a barrel, up 68 cents. Gasoline at $2.81 3/10, that's 0.6 cents lower. Ethanol futures at $1.96, up a penny and a tenth, and the difference between the two is now 85 3/10 cents wide on the spread. That's a penny and 7 cents narrower than it was on Thursday afternoon. Natural gas at $4.40 7/10 cents. Down 2 6/10, and the New York Harbor Ultra Low Sulfur Diesel at $3.12 7/10 cents, up 3 3/10 cents. Gold futures finished $1,214.10, $1.90 higher on the day.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Sunny skies, a high of 46 degrees on a south-southwest wind at about 10 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear and a low of 29. Saturday, sunny and a high of 49 degrees. South-southwest winds at 11 to 14. And Saturday evening, partly cloudy, a low of 31. On Sunday, a 40% chance of snowfall, mostly cloudy, a high of 34 degrees with a west-southwest wind at 9 to 18 miles an hour. That'll turn to the northwest and bring much colder temperatures with it in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 26, and by the time we get to Sunday night, we'll fall to just 7 degrees with mostly cloudy skies. Monday, sunny skies and a high of just 14. Monday night, partly cloudy and a low of 5 degrees. Tuesday, partly sunny and a high of 19. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
Have you signed up yet for our Evening with the Voices of Illinois Agriculture? Don't tarry, because this will happen pretty quickly. There are only about 100 slots, and if you have not signed up, this is our fundraiser for scholarships to the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. It's set for Friday evening, January the 24th, at the Spice Box on the second floor of Bevere Hall. That's on the south end of the Urbana-Champaign campus in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. We'll kick off the evening with a keynote address by none other than the president of the University of Illinois. I can't tell you how happy I am that Bob Easter will be able to address us that evening. And then we'll move into our dinner and eventually get to a really good marketing panel, including Steve Fried from ADM Investor Services, Pete Manhart, Wayne Nelson, and Jackie Vanks. Daryl Good will be there to wrap up things, and Gary Schnittke will talk about crop insurance. Oh, and the president of ADM Investor Services, Tom Kadlec, says he'd like to say a few words too. It'll be brief. It should be a fantastic evening if you didn't make it to the first one. How about the second annual Voices of Illinois Agriculture event that kicks off at 6 p.m. January the 24th? You can find all the details on our website at willag.org.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's Friday, the 27th day of December, 2013. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. The USDA released its hog inventory. It shows hogs and pigs as of December the 1st of this year at 65.9 million head. That as of the release this afternoon at 2 o'clock Central Time. That's down 1% from a year ago and down 2% from September of this year. The breeding herd at 5.76 million head, down 1% from last year, down 1% from the previous quarter. And the market hog herd at 60.2 million head was down 1% from last year and down 2% from last quarter. On the phone line this afternoon, in the stead of Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike is on holiday this afternoon. Is Alton Kalo. He is a consultant in Manchester, New Hampshire with the Steiner Group. Thank you so much for taking the time with us, Alton. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself and the Steiner Consulting Group first, please.
In the food commodity business, but most of our clients tend to be on the food service and retail end. So we most of our focus is on, from the packer all the way to the consumer, and so we're involved mostly on the meat side, but also expanding on grains and dairy in recent years.
How did you view this afternoon's USDA report?
We think it's a bullish report. I mean, that's no question about that. In addition to the numbers that USDA published for the recent quarter, they made some significant changes to numbers in previous quarters, especially for the December, February, and March, May of 2013. And so some of the year-over-year changes versus the models we had, that kind of used their historical numbers, they're going to have to go, we're going to have to go back and kind of view them a little bit more in detail. We've had about 10 minutes now or 15 minutes that we've looked at this report. But that's where some of the big changes have been. I mean, they went back and revised the farrowing numbers for the March-May quarter down about 5.6% year-over-year, and this is for the March-May 2013. The reason they went back and did that is because USDA looks at the slaughter numbers as they come through, several months down the road, and then they, they true up the survey results so that it matches reality. And it looks like some of the previous surveys really missed the supply that was on the ground. It missed the impact of the spike in feed costs that we had last year, And because of that, it just it kind of gave a somewhat inaccurate view of what the market was. And I think some of that had gotten discounted in the market already. People were looking at the slaughter numbers, and they really didn't match at all. I mean, especially as you know, in the fourth quarter of 2013, and USDA numbers. I mean, they had to go back and fix that. Having said that, I mean, the inventory number down 1% from a year ago. Somewhat of a bullish number. It's on the low end of the estimates. One number that really surprised me is the breeding herd down 1.1% from a year ago. We were thinking that with lower feed costs, higher retention rates on gilts, you would see at least a modest expansion of the breeding herd. But at this point, it looks like the disease impact is quite significant, and it's really had affected the producers for this last quarter, and the numbers show that. And so you look at some of the, and just going down the list here, I mean the death loss that this the numbers imply is significantly higher than what it's been in previous year. And the way we arrived at that death loss number is, we look at what the total supply was that came to market. You adjust for the slaughter. You know what the inventory number was that's published on December 1. Well, somehow we lost a lot of pigs along the way. And, according to that, I mean, it looks like the death loss is about 4% compared to about 2% that we had, the same quarter a year ago.
So this report comes on the heels of the cattle numbers, which show that there will be fewer cattle on hand. Absolutely. In the coming year, too. How did you read that? That report obviously received as bullish as well.
Yeah, I mean, the call in the cattle market has been, it's been bullish, for a while.
Right.
One thing that's happened with the cattle on feed numbers is that, last summer, we placed fewer cattle on feed, but they tended to skew on the heavy side of the range, and so because of that, we had a disproportionate number of cattle come to market earlier in the marketing window, and because of that, we've had the fed slaughter so far, probably only a couple of percentage points lower than a year ago. That means that we're going to have fewer cattle that are going to come to market in the first quarter of 2014. And, our call right now is for the kill to be down about 6% or so on the Fed side for the first quarter of the year. And that's a pretty significant reduction. And the call on the cattle side has been bullish all along. The market was very uncertain about what the situation on the ground is with pigs and the impact that, the PED virus is having on production, and the latest report just seems to support the view that the losses are significant, and if anything, they're going to get worse.
I only have about 35 seconds for you. Will this have an impact on the feed and residual number when it comes out, and stocks on hand from December 1?
We would think so, and we think the reports are bearish for the grain market. There's no question about that, because we've got fewer animal units to consume the large stockpiles that we harvested this fall.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Alton Kalo is with the Steiner Consulting Group. He is in Manchester, New Hampshire, joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Illinois Farm Economics Summits, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by the Assistant Director of the Tax School at the U of I, Mark Lovell. Thanks, Mark, for taking the time with us. In January of 2014, farmers and everybody else in the United States will be faced with some questions that they have to answer about their health care program. Those of us that are employed by employers that provide our health care don't have to worry about it so much, but those that are self-employed or not employed at all do have some decisions to make, and they must go and to a website potentially and make those decisions about whether they're going to sign up for health care from the U.S. government.
Yes. Generally, if you have the ability to obtain coverage that meets the certain minimum requirements, minimum essential coverage, through your employer, you should be fine. The folks that are going to have the most difficulty are the ones that have to go to the exchange to get coverage for themselves in order to fulfill that individual mandate, which is the requirement effective 1 January 2014, requiring everybody to have coverage in place for themselves that meets those minimum requirements or face a potential penalty when they file their return in April of next year, 2015. So that'll be the challenge, is getting through that website. A lot of them have had some pretty substantial problems. People have gotten cancellation notices. They go to the websites. They enroll in coverage, think they have coverage, find out 2 weeks later when they go to the doctor that the coverage, for some reason, fell through the cracks and doesn't exist. So they'll go back to the website and try and re-enter or re-key in all the information. It is a confusing process. It has not been made easy. But my understanding, based on the latest information we have, is that they are ironing out some of the wrinkles. A few differences from state to state, because the problems are different from state to state. But gradually, as the dust settles, things should work much better as we kind of move through and get some of these programming issues with that federal exchange dealt with.
Let's deal with producers, self-employed folks, those who would own their own business. Farmers generally fall into that category, that have had health insurance, have paid for health insurance for their family for years. They have plans. They'd like to stay with those plans. Is that possible?
There are some plans that will have grandfathered status. The Affordable Care Act has a whole section on grandfathered plans. It's good to check with your insurance carrier to determine and confirm that the plan does qualify for grandfathered status. If it does, the real key are the record-keeping requirements. The grandfathered plans that are able to be maintained moving forward are going to have some pretty rigorous record-keeping requirements. No doubt the ACA and the folks that drafted it are going to try and phase those out. So this has kind of been viewed as a temporary measure instead of a long-term thing. But yes, it is possible to have a plan that will be grandfathered moving forward, that can be kept in place at who knows how long.
Let's set some parameters for the producers, the self-employed. It's a family-owned farm with maybe a couple employees. They're seasonal, part-time, so certainly less than 50. What things have to happen as you go to the Affordable Care websites and begin to enroll?
Well, again, if they're under 50 employees, they're not subject to the employer mandate. So the business does not have to provide coverage to its full-time employees. But everybody working for the business, everybody that owns the business, is still subject to that individual mandate. So they're going to have to ensure that they have coverage in place for themselves. So those are individuals that are going to have to go to that exchange. They're going to have to hit the website, go to the exchange, key in their income information, all kinds of personal information about themselves, dependents, and the website should crunch the numbers and tell them if they qualify for any premium assistance credit based on the level of their income, which can be used to pay part or even all of their premium, depending on how the numbers finalize for their particular situation. But those are generally individuals that are going to have to go to the exchange to get their coverage.
Are there reasons that they can opt out of the coverage?
Yeah, there are a series of 9 exemptions that are under the rules. For example, if they can't obtain affordable coverage, and what that means under the Affordable Care Act, if they're going to be required to spend more than 8% of their household income, that's generally income of everybody in the household, including perhaps older children that work. If they have to spend more than 8% of that household income amount for coverage, they may qualify for an exemption. There is also an exemption for hardship. There are a number of different grounds. And again, as they get into that website, there should be a place for them to apply for any number of these exemptions that they think they may qualify for, including the hardship one.
This is called the Affordable Health Care Act. What does it cost to enroll?
That varies from state to state. Every state, insurance companies are regulated by the individual state, so it's really hard to determine what the quote-unquote cost is or make a blanket statement of that. There are some people I've talked to who are finding their premiums have dropped a little bit. There are a lot of people who are finding their costs have increased. I think overall we're going to find that cost increase because the insurance companies under the Affordable Care Act are taking on additional risks that they weren't asked to take on before. For example, they have to provide coverage for individuals without taking into consideration pre-existing conditions. So if someone's had a heart attack or a stroke, they can't be charged an additional premium for that over and above someone who's healthy. So again, these are additional risks that the insurance companies are taking on. I think ultimately in any insurance risk pool situation, everybody pays that price. So that's one example of why I think overall costs are going to go up. I think the administrative costs as well. I don't think anybody really knows where the dust is going to settle and who's going to pay that. But ultimately, I think it's going to be the consumer that ends up paying that as part of their premium, no matter where those costs end up being paid further up the chain.
Are some of the policies set up much like the policies self-employed folks, others would already have? Do they have to buy a supplemental insurance policy over and above what might be available on the exchange?
Well, what's available on the exchange, and most exchanges being set up are going to have a setup where you have a choice of bronze, silver, or gold coverage. So it's being divided into these three different areas, perhaps other ones too that may be available because the insurance companies have some flexibility as to how to offer coverage over the exchange. But it's being made in those types of categories in order to make it easy for the consumer to know what it is they're getting. But all the coverage that you would obtain through the exchange will meet those certain requirements, minimum essential coverage. And generally, in a nutshell, what that means is you can't have something like chronic illness coverage or accidental coverage, some sort of limited coverage, because that's not going to meet those requirements. You can certainly buy that in addition to minimum essential coverage if you wish. That's an option that's available. But anything over the exchange is going to meet those requirements. Insurance companies know what those requirements are, and they're going to market insurance that meets those requirements because they don't want a backlash from someone that purchases coverage from them that later finds out that it did not meet those requirements and that they're subject to a penalty.
Again, when is the sign-up period? I think we're already in the midst of it. When is the mandate started, and what are the penalties?
Well, you're right. We are in the enrollment period right now. Technically, it kicked off on 1 October, although there were major problems with that exchange. And as you know, a lot of people who tried to enroll couldn't. The mandate does become effective on 1 January. The penalties for 2014, if you don't have coverage, is generally there's an amount, this $95 amount that everybody's been talking about. And it's $95 per person in the household that should have had coverage but didn't. If it's someone under 18, it'd be half that amount, so it'd be $47.50, or 1% of your income minus a certain filing threshold amount. It's really the greater of those two. So, it's not just the $95. So you could be on the hook for a pretty substantial penalty. Moving forward to 2015, that $95 amount jumps to $325. So again, that's part two of the phase-in, stiffer penalties in 2015. The final of the three-year phase-in period is 2016, where that number jumps to $695. So again, it's going to be the greater of 1% of your income or $695 per person in the household that didn't have coverage and wasn't exempt.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Mark Lovell is the Assistant Director of the Tax School at the University of Illinois. You can find the Tax School at taxschool.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support. It's National Fruitcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1741, Jean Bourne was born, the inventor of the sugar granulating process. He also was founder of the sugar industry in Louisiana. In 1822, Louis Pasteur was born, a French scientist. He showed that microorganisms were responsible for disease, food spoilage, and fermentation. He developed the process for killing those organisms by heat, called pasteurization. He also developed vaccines for anthrax and rabies. In 1867, William Cecil Dampier was born, a British scientist, agriculturalist, and science historian. He developed a method of extracting lactose from surplus whey, a process that was used on a commercial scale during the cheese shortage in Britain during World War I. He also conducted experiments for more efficient means of production on farmland. In 1931, Dampier was knighted for his public service in agriculture. In 1923, Michael Owens died, an American glass manufacturer. He invented the automatic glass bottling making machine that revolutionized the industry. And in 1968, Victor Shelford died, an American zoologist and ecologist. He was one of the first to treat ecology as a separate science. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM. Their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Weather conditions across the Midwest are expected to be relatively tranquil over the next several days, but we will see one storm system move through the southeast corner of the region while another comes across the north. The northern storm is only going to be a surge of cold air. I say only, but it's probably going to be a relatively significant event. Since temperatures this afternoon in parts of the Dakotas and Minnesota will likely rise into the 30s and perhaps a few 40s, but it just 2 days later, Sunday morning and Monday morning, the temperatures during the morning hours are likely to be in the negative 20s and negative 30s, perhaps. Those negative 30s will be mostly in northern Minnesota and northeastern North Dakota. But nevertheless, we will see temperature extremes that are dramatically different from what we'll see this afternoon across those areas. The sub-zero temperatures are expected to reach down into northern Missouri and northwestern Illinois, and most of the soft wheat that's produced in those areas today is buried in snow. However, temperatures will be warm across the region today and tomorrow, and that will melt some more of the snow. We may have some areas that become snow-free when the coldest air comes back into the region Sunday and Monday. The cold is not expected to be quite cold enough to raise damage potentials for soft wheat, especially as well hardened as the crop is right now. The crop is really quite hardy, and I think it will survive temperatures near zero, even if there are some pockets of snow-free conditions out there. So the temperatures will be the biggest issue over the weekend. Now, there will be a little bit of light snow that will precede the coldest weather. Most of the snow is expected to occur tomorrow in the northern plains, and then tomorrow night into Sunday across the Great Lakes region. I don't think there'll be much snow that will fall south of the Great Lakes region, so places like northern Illinois, southern Iowa, and northern Missouri will probably not see much in the way of meaningful snow accumulations, and whatever melting of snow occurs over the next couple of days may leave some of that crop exposed to the coldest weather. Temperatures across the Midwest, I've already mentioned, will turn much colder across the region. We do expect to see the lower eastern parts of the Midwest to see some temperature extremes dropping down into the upper single-digit readings and teens during the first part of next week when the coldest air is ready to settle into that region. In the meantime, temperatures will be warming up, and we'll expect afternoon highs today to be mostly in the 30s and 40s across the lower Midwest and the upper 20s and 30s in the north, and we'll likely see the temperatures continuing to warm with afternoon highs in the 40s and lower 50s on Saturday before the colder air begins to push through the region. In the meantime, in South America, Argentina and southern Brazil are still poised to get significant precipitation as we move forward through these next few days. The greatest precipitation will occur late in the weekend and early to midweek next week. Enough rain will likely fall to take the edge of the heat and moisture stress off and improve crop and field conditions quite a bit in many locations. Now, some areas in Argentina will not get as much relief as others. The areas of concern will be in portions of Buenos Aires and La Pampa, where little to no rain is likely to fall. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Our thanks, of course, go to Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City for his update of the weather forecast. That wraps up this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Darrell Good will be on Commodity Week. That's up on our website already. It does have an updated set of information for the South American weather from meteorologist Ed Kieser. It's all at willag.org.